Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Wednesday, June 2nd, 2010. Tech News Today is brought to you by Slingbox. Watch your favorite TV shows when you're away from home with Slingbox. Check out Slingbox at a Best Buy near you or at slingbox.com. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I am Becky Worley.
And behind the board is our excellent producer, Eric Lanigan. Welcome,
hey, guys.
Eric.
How are you?
They want you to talk more.
Well, I'm talking right now.
There, I made him say two sentences today. He's pretty dang busy back there. This is the show where we kick around the tech news of the day along with you guys, either in your car, at home, in the chat room, watching live. Joining us today is Veronica Belmont from revision3.com/techzilla and Core on the PlayStation Network. Hey, Veronica.
Hey, thank you guys for having me. I wish I could be in the cottage with you.
I wish you could, too. We'll have to get you up here one of these days. We can sneak you out of Core one day, right?
Definitely.
When they're not looking?
Yeah.
we'll send cupcakes and they'll all be distracted?
She seems
That's
busy.
That's a great plan.
Yeah. She seems really busy. I like that.
That girl is very busy. Mm-hmm. Joining us later on the show, we have Sean Hollister from Engadget. We're going to talk about a story he posted. But first, let's start out with the brand new AT&T data plans for iPhones and iPads. Everybody's happy about these, right?
It's interesting. The reaction has been all across the map. So let's just spread this out for you in terms of the big story is about data consumption. So unlimited data.
Gone.
If you purchase a new iPhone, you are grandfathered in if you already have it and want to keep it.
A good point. Nothing changes if you've got a plan already, unless you want it to.
Unless you want it to change, but they've also announced tethering. But if you want the tethering, you have to let go of your unlimited data plan.
Yeah, we'll get to whether that is sucky or not. But you're going to save money if you get the new plan, because right now it's about $30 a month for a data plan. The new plans are $15 and $25. So $15 gets you 200 megabytes per month. That's hardly anything. $25 gets you 2 gigs a month. And the interesting thing that I think they're doing that's right here, and we can talk about all the things that are wrong with it. I'm sure Veronica's chomping at the bit for that. But one of the things they're doing right here is if you go over the limit, you just get charged again for another 1 gigabyte in the case of the Data Pro plan, or another 200 megabytes in the case of the Data Plus plan. They don't charge you per kilobyte, which is what they have done in the past for their data cards and things like that.
Everybody has been okay with the idea for the most part. It's been spendy to have that sort of one-size-fits-all plan, but people have what I call OAD, overage anxiety disorder, and they're so afraid of going over their monthly allotment that they're willing to pay all you can eat because they're so afraid of those per kilobyte.
Well, that's because the charges get so high when you start having those overages that people kind of get the fear of the overage costs like really instilled inside of them.
And I think is it $10 per gig over? Is that correct? It's not, I can't remember what.
Well, on the Data Pro plan, yeah, it's $10 when you go over a gig. And that's something that I think is kind of a sham here. $15 for 200 megabytes. If you go over, it's another $15 for another 200 megabytes. $25 for 2 gigabytes. If you go over, let me double check. But yeah, it's another $10 for a gigabyte. So you pay less for a gigabyte than you do for overage of 200 megabytes. Why don't you get a break on the price with the 200 megabyte overage?
Nobody said it had to make sense, Tom.
Yeah.
In the big picture, and I think this is going to create lively debate, as a consumer reporter, I think this is a good deal for most consumers, because AT&T says 98% of its consumers use less than 2 gigs per month. I checked my usage. I'm at about 250.
I've used 6 gigs since November.
Yeah, so that averages out. That's not bad.
Yeah.
So I think that on the whole, this is going to save consumers $5 a month minimum, possibly more if they're low data consumers. And that, that's $60 a year, $150 a year. Yeah.
The other good thing here is they give you alerts. In the iPhone, they'll have an automatic like push notification that'll come up. If you don't have an iPhone, they'll send you a text message or send you an email saying, hey, you're getting close to your limit. So just know if you go over that limit, you're going to get charged for another block, or you can switch your plan on the fly. So if you're at the 200 megabyte limit paying the $15 and you get the notification, you can actually switch to the Data Pro before you hop over the limit, and that will prevent you from getting charged the extra money.
But you can never go back to the unlimited once you go off.
Once you go away from unlimited, you can never go back. You know that old saying.
You know, I spoke with guy at AT&T who's head of their marketing PR group, and he basically said they think they're going to lose money right out of the gates because they're charging less.
Wait, they think they're going to lose money on this?
Yeah.
Why would they do it then?
Because they want more smartphone consumers to come and purchase smartphones. They think that the barrier to entry is the data plan cost, and if they drop it down, that they're going to get more consumers of smartphones, which will eventually lead to a bigger user base of smartphone users, which will be more money in the long run. So,
do you really think that's the barrier to entry for most people, is the cost of the data plan?
It's a tough call. I mean, I think people want that connectivity and want email everywhere. They want web access. But I think that the cost of cell service is majorly prohibitive for a large portion of the consumer base. Not for us, people who are tech obsessed. But I think that that's the bubble. Is we have to remember that this is a budget issue for 70% of America.
I totally agree with you there. I'm just worried that a lot of it could also probably be the fact that AT&T's coverage and services are so abominable in so many places that people are saying, why should I pay more for service that I've heard isn't going to be as good?
Yeah, and this isn't that much cheaper. You're saving $5 off your current plan. So
you could save $15.
If you go to my, you know, skinflint uncle, I don't have a skinflint uncle, but you go to my skinflint uncle who says, I don't want to pay $30 for data, and you say, oh, you only have to pay $15. Is that enough?
You know what? I've learned this doing consumer for mass audience. $15 a month, everybody's tightening the belt. 15 here, 10 here, 5 here. Yeah, it makes a difference.
Well, I'm thinking they'll still say, I don't need it. Whereas the data consumers are going to look at this as like, wait, I have a cap. I don't know that this works for anybody.
I disagree. I think that a savings is a savings, and that if 2% of the population is bitter about it, I see a benefit. Now, I get it, and it was actually great. I went to AT&T's page, and I have to read some of these rants because they were epic. They have a Facebook page, and this one is written by a guy whose Facebook name is Skeeter Harris. I hope this is his real name. I love how AT&T announced the new data plans and then tried to divert attention to it by saying, we now have tethering coming out with OS 4. All caps.
Oh, gosh.
Hello, iPhone tethering was promised a year ago.
They're at least 6 months late on that boat at this point. And the thing that drives me crazy, though, is the whole tethering plan is great. Like, we've been waiting for this for a super, super long time. But then they're tacking on more money to use the tethering on top of your already existing data plan.
Right.
So you're paying more money to use your data how you want to use it.
It is a bit of a double dip because you have to pay $20 a month for the tether.
Yep.
So I was thinking, okay, maybe let's say if you're really teched out, you've got your iPhone and your iPad, you're gonna ditch your iPad AT&T account. So that's $15 a month minimum.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to tether from your iPhone. It ends up being the same amount as if you're getting unlimited now, $30 plus 15. So it's $45 a month, even if you tether your iPad to your iPhone. But that's a little inside baseball. But I just was thinking, oh, maybe there's some savings here, but no.
What I am glad about with this is that they are actually telling you what the limit is instead of saying it's unlimited and then kind of jumping out of the bushes for a few people and going, ah, you're using too much. Yeah, even though it's unlimited, you actually know what you're paying for and you know how much it's going to be.
People are bitter about this. There are a lot of people who don't like these caps and don't like this idea. This is another one from the Facebook page. Tom Twiddell. I feel like a battered wife. AT&T is my drunken, abusive husband, and the iPhone is the child I love. I'm going to stay in this miserable marriage for the sake of our baby.
The iPhone. Oh, geez.
Well, I was a little worried about it, too, but then I actually looked at my usage, and since I'm always on Wi-Fi when I'm at work or at home, I don't even come close to the data usage. So. Yeah. Might not really be that bad of a thing.
And wouldn't we be pretty high-end data consumers? I mean, we are always on needing to stay connected.
I have to say, though, I went through close to 5 gigs on my MiFi when I was in Hawaii, when I was using my laptop and my iPad and my iPhone. And if you tether...
Plus, you give that password out pretty freely, I've got to say. You got to be a little more closed-door
Password for Mai Tai. Hello. Mai Tai, Mai Fi, whatever.
Yeah, when you're in Hawaii.
Use my Mai Fi.
It's the aloha spirit, okay?
Data for everyone.
This is actually an interesting concept, though. Another point is that this new data plan applies to all data users, not just iPhone users. So
right, all
this is another point
users, right.
from Facebook, Dustin Liebland. To put this in perspective, BlackBerry consumers use about 54 megabytes of data per month on average. That's according to Consumer Reports. So a large majority of the BlackBerry consumers will now qualify to use this $15 a month data plan, which is a big win.
Bigger savings for them. Yeah, that's a good point. All right, let's move on to Steve Jobs dishing it at D8. We talked about this happening yesterday, and we have a few sound bites to give you a sample of what he said. It was 90 minutes, but he didn't say a whole lot.
Well, it wasn't. So let's just set this up. D8 is the conference being held by the Wall Street Journal's Kara Swisher and Walt Mossberg. It's being held down at a Shishi Resort down in Southern California. All the heavy hitters are there. And it was a question and answer with Walt and Kara, who... are generally positive on the Apple, so it was kind of controlled. So he had a lot of things to say, but let's start with what he had to say about Flash. And I thought this was really interesting.
What if the market says, hey, you know, it's important enough to us to be able to run not just these videos, but whole websites? What if people say, you know, the iPad is crippled in this respect.
Well, you know, well, I'd say two things.
That's Walt Mossberg asking the question.
Things are packages of emphasis. Some things are emphasized in a product. Some things are not done as well in a product. Some things are chosen not to be done at all in a product. And so different people make different choices. And if the market tells us we're making the wrong choices, we listen to the market. We're just people running this company. We're trying to make great products for people. And so we have at least the courage of our convictions to say, we don't think this is part of what makes a great product. We're going to leave it out. That's what a lot of customers pay us to do, is to try to make the best products we can. And if we succeed, they'll buy them. And if we don't, they won't.
There you go. I mean, that's...
And it'll all work itself out.
That's the key, right? Is, you know what? You don't like it, don't buy it.
These videos are exclusively at the D8 conference site, and they cut them and they edited them together. But it seemed like a fair representation of his position. And he's saying, let the markets decide. We are paid to make a clean environment. Buy it?
Veronica, you buy it?
Yeah. No, I understand where he's coming from in that regard. And there, he had some other interesting things to say about Flash as well. I can't remember the quote right now, but I see where he's coming from. It's difficult because Flash does make up a lot of our internet environment, and we tend to come across it a lot in our day-to-day internet travels. And it's hard to see those holes when you're trying to use a device like the iPad or the iPhone. But on the same token, you know, it's kind of broken at this point.
One of the things he said that always when you think about the motivation of Steve Jobs is that he always says Apple is a hardware company. So hardware drives his decision-making. And he said, nobody pitched a fit when we lost the 5 diskette and we went to 3.5 inch.
Yeah, they did. They got over it.
It wasn't like this. Or maybe it just we weren't a nation of bloggers.
And he tried to compare Flash to HyperCard. That was pretty hilarious. Another quote you can find at d8.allthingsd.com comes with Steve Jobs talking about Gizmodo. This is the most he's said about this entire situation.
It's very colorful, and the DA is investigating it. And to my knowledge, they have somebody from the courts that is making sure that they only see stuff that relates to this case and no other cases. I believe they're taking great pains to do that. And so I don't know where it will end up. It's really up to the DA.
What do you imagine the next 10 years of your life is going to be about?
When this whole thing with Gizmodo happened, I got a lot of advice from people that said, you've got to just let it slide. You shouldn't go after a journalist because they bought stolen property and they tried to extort you. And I thought deeply about this, and I ended up concluding that the worst thing that could possibly happen as we get big and we get a little more influence in the world is if we change our core values and start letting it slide. I can't do that. I'd rather quit.
I thought that was fascinating and a real insight into the guy that this event was a crucible for him and that he had soul searching to figure out if he was going to let his public perception, the public's perception of him take a hit because he was really mad about this. And he decided, be damned. This is who I am. I'm mad. I'm making this happen. I'm going after it.
Do you think that's true or do you think he's spinning it?
Oh, I think it's totally true.
You mean, do you think was mad?
Do you think he's trying to, you know, he wants to punish Gizmodo, and so he's trying to make it sound like this was an honest event for him, a personal, you know, affront to his...
No, I think he was deeply personally affronted by the whole thing, like something he had spent all this time working on, this, you know, and it's just out there all of a sudden. He lost control, and that's the one thing Steve Jobs does not ever want to do, is lose control. And so he was pissed.
He said he was pissed about something else later on when he was talking about Flurry Analytics getting the information out about the iPad, and you could tell it felt like violation, and the sense of ownership that
he's prickly.
Has.
Yeah.
It was interesting. I went back and watched his D1 8 years ago speech at the same event. He was chubby. He was slouched in his chair. He talked slowly. He was saying how the iPod would never have a store in it because you just couldn't make it happen. But I mean, everything about him, something has, obviously he's had a serious life change, but it was fascinating. If you're a Steve Jobs fan, go watch that D1 on the speech. It was fascinating.
And go to d8allthingsd.com and watch that whole clip, because if you want to find out how to predict when things like Apple TV are going to get released, he essentially explains the entire process that Apple goes through every time they decide to change their path or come out with something, what the criteria are for them to say, okay, that's a product we want to hop onto and get going. So we thank All Things D for bringing that. It's a really interesting conversation they had. Mm-hmm. Let's move to the FCC. Most broadband users are unaware of how much speed they get. You'd think that would be a bad thing. Everyone out there going, I don't know, I'm lost in the dark. But it also turns out that they're all perfectly satisfied with the speed they get, even though they don't know how much they're getting.
There's one time when consumers are really mad about their broadband, and that's when it's off.
When it doesn't work.
The internet's broke.
Yeah. That, as long as it still works, if it's slow, they blame the site. They don't blame the ISP.
Or they think they have a virus.
71% assured the government that their connection is as fast as the provider promises, even though, what was the percentage?
Like 50%.
54%, I think, didn't know what the speed's supposed to be anyway.
And there was an obscene amount of data that showed that the promised speed from the ISP was not even close to being hit. I called the FCC today because I'm really interested in the tool that they put on their site to have people actually check speeds. You know, you sort of...
Yeah, they're recruiting people to help out, like, identifying how speed works and where the problems are and where they should put the money to invest in bringing broadband to the rural areas.
And this is part of Janikowski's broadband initiative. And I think over 300,000 people have taken these tests. They've got mobile tests. And it was fascinating, the data crunching they have. I'll try and get a link out to this because I thought it was fascinating. But average download speeds were like 7 megs.
That's it? 7 megs?
Yeah.
Well, if you're for DSL, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I was pretty impressed. What I'm getting 22 down.
Yeah.
What are you getting?
I get 50.
Dang.
But I pay for it. I mean, I pay for a business account, so that's why I was curious. There's only a very small slice of this that is our business users.
Right.
This is a very consumer focused situation.
Yeah,
so
only 5% of test takers. Only 2% of test takers were large business. And looks like about 2% were medium business. This is all consumer home stuff.
And you're going to need all that broadband because you're going to want to watch Hulu on your Xbox 360. And let's bring in Sean Hollister from Engadget.com, who wrote a posting today about a rumor out there that Hulu might be coming to the Xbox. Tell us a little about the post.
Yes, that's right. Basically, the story is... we've got Gear Live. Our new Gear Live said that And I thought I wouldn't have any stage fright at all in my first live appearance on a tech show.
There no worries, go. Dude.
It's only episode two. You can cut it in half. We're really just a bunch of jokers out here.
We made you wait too long to get started.
There we go. Anyhow, I want to give out a shout out to Gear Live. This is their story. They broke it. They said that they've got some internal documentation showing Hulu on the dashboard of the Xbox 360 in an internal build. It looks like it's coming. We suspect it's coming at E3 2010. We're not quite sure about that, but it makes perfect sense for Hulu to do this. It makes perfect sense for the Xbox to do this after all this time. Hulu's been looking for an outlet for some time, a way to make money other than the advertisements on its internet website, but they've got some restrictions that keep them from bringing it to set-top boxes. They kept Boxy from using it. They shut it down on mobile browsers. If you use Skyfire, you try to go to Hulu on your Windows mobile phone, your Android phone, you can't use Hulu. Same thing for the PlayStation 3. But they need some extra money, so if you look at the Xbox, it's a great market for them to test out a paid service for Hulu, which we've been hearing rumored for some time now, without telling PC users who expect to get this service for free, all of a sudden, no, you've got to pay for it.
Now, do you think it would be a paid service where you buy a Hulu app or you pay for it, or do you think they would throw it in as an Xbox Live thing where you pay for a tier in Xbox Live?
Yeah, it's like if you're already paying for Xbox Live, why would you want to have to chip in extra money to get the Hulu content on there? I have to say I'm a little bit biased because I do work on a Sony product, so I probably shouldn't talk about this too much.
But I think, I think sweetening the deal is a good idea, though, because, you know, going back to tightening budgets, gaming subscriptions, when mom is looking at the budgets and that gaming subscription is fat on the budget, if you can also throw in something that mom and dad want, maybe.
Well, we're looking at two different ways that they might go about it here. For one thing, the major newspapers have been hearing rumors that there's going to be a paid subscription for Hulu somewhere at some point, regardless of the platform it appears on. And we heard possibilities that $5, $10 were figures that were rumored for this service. We heard it might be coming to the iPad. We heard it might be the PC service. Now we're hearing it might be Xbox. That would be one way to go about it. But another rumor that keeps popping up year after year is that Microsoft itself will introduce an Xbox Live Platinum tier where they will offer increased functionality, things like Hulu, perhaps other kinds of movies, direct download to your console and things like that for an increased fee instead of making this an additional part of the existing service. So we might see a Platinum tier where it costs a little bit more if you want to get the extra Hulu experience and things like that, and then Hulu will get part of the proceeds.
All right. Well, thanks, Sean. Appreciate you joining us today and giving us a little insight there. You can find Sean's work at Engadget.com, and you just started there not too long ago, breaking a big story. Good job, man.
Thank you very much.
All right. Another story we want to talk to you about is streaming video outpacing P2P traffic growth. This is a Cisco study. They're saying that we will actually not be getting most of our video from BitTorrent. We will not be going to P2P. According to Cisco's annual Visual Networking Index forecast, by 2014, we're going to see a fourfold increase, 767 exabytes of video. Most of it's going to be streaming.
Well, it seems like a good thing to me. This is proof that the systems are in place and starting to work, and that you don't need to steal.
Well, the question is, will that revert back if Hulu starts charging for use of their service?
I don't know. I mean, I think that this is just such the Wild West right now that something will become more dominant. But I just think this is iTunes became so much easier to use than Kazaa or LimeWire. The only options are, you know, for the media companies to start seeding viruses on BitTorrent, which I always think.
Well, you know what? They don't even have to. There's so many viruses already on there. They don't have to seed them. And so
at least they can feel like they're doing something. You know what I mean? Or make it easier for people to, and cheaper and more cost effective for people to buy this content. I think it's a good sign. I think it's a natural thing that's going to start happening. We've seen this model before.
All right,
I think it's interesting. I just wanted to say real fast.
Yeah, sure.
It's especially interesting because they're really getting good at catching people who are illegally using BitTorrent now. Like that story that just came out recently about the Hurt Locker and people getting sued for actually downloading it over BitTorrent. And we see stories like that all the time now. And it's like, wow, you get actually nervous thinking about using BitTorrent illegally.
Yeah, and they're going after all the people who are stopping using it. I mean, this goes back to what we were talking about yesterday as far as, you know, the music industry realized that dropping DRM didn't really change the game. There are other ways that they have to do to combat piracy. And I think this points the way for video. It's like, look, just go with streaming. Stop trying to DRM everything all to get out. That's not stopping piracy. And streaming is an easy way for you to get something that people want. They want it streaming. They don't want to go and have to download it. Not that people will never download it, but they prefer streaming, or at least that's the indication.
The percentage will get smaller.
Don't forget, folks, this episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Slingbox. Slingbox lets you watch your home TV anywhere you go and on most any portable device. You can use your iPhone, iPod Touch, via Wi-Fi, Blackberries, laptops, MacBooks. Here's what you do to make it easier than me pronouncing MacBook. You go to Best Buy, buy a Slingbox, bring it home, hook it up to your TV and your internet connection, and then you can watch your TV on your mobile phone or your laptop wherever you go, wherever you're connected to the internet. You can watch any program you get on television or have recorded on your DVR, any of the same shows you want to watch over the internet to your device. Check it out, Slingbox, at a Best Buy near you, or just go to slingbox.com.
Little calendar action. We have day two of the D8 conference. Mark Zuckerberg talking today, Jeffrey Katzenberg, a bunch of heavy hitters. We also have next week, Internet Week in New York, eBay's DevCon coming up, and then in 2 weeks, E3.
E3. You're going, Eric, right?
I am. I'll be going there with Leo and Brian Rushwood, and I'll be running camera, running the live view, streaming it out, so I think we'll have live coverage on Twit.
Yeah, we'll miss you.
So much.
But I'll be back here in the office, and we'll wrap up every day's coverage with Tech News Today, hopefully getting Leo and Brian on, kind of saying this is the stuff we saw today if you missed it. All right, one last story before we get to voicemails and emails. Software that describes surveillance footage in AI-generated tech. I saw this on Slashdot, but it comes from Technology Review from MIT. Essentially, what this company or these researchers have done is figure out how to identify objects in motion video and then describe them automatically. So the source that they use, if you take a look at the video that they have, is a picture of an intersection. You've got a camera up on a stoplight.
Security camera, surveillance camera.
Yeah, it's like a surveillance camera. And you see it saying, like, lead vehicle 359 enters the intersection from the right. 339 moves 29 meters in the left direction. It is describing what is happening in the video. And the way they did this was they got a bunch of art school students in China to go through and aid it in identifying, saying, no, that's a car. And that, you know, and that's a sidewalk. That thing's not moving. And then once they built up enough of a data set, then the computer could actually do it on its own.
And I think it's interesting is to think about the problem. The problem is we have millions of surveillance cameras for security reasons, but we have no one monitoring them in real time. They're really only used to sort of reverse engineer what happened or serve as a deterrent if people see the cameras themselves. So the hope is that this technology would make it easier to recognize something in real time that's a danger or a problem. But I actually just, when you were talking about that, I was like, this is a brilliant outsourcing idea. Why aren't we outsourcing the monitoring of surveillance cameras to places where things are cheap?
Yeah, it's video to text.
I like it.
And this could also be used for search engine.
That's scary.
Yeah, to be able to search videos.
You seen my dog?
Well, YouTuber uses an algorithm like that in order to find copyright material on YouTube that can actually search. Like when they took down all the downfall videos, the Hitler video meme. Mm. The way they can find those is that they actually have an algorithm that matches video and finds it within all of their, you know, their search database.
And for that to work, you have to have a hashtag based on the original source, and it can only find that. What's interesting about this, since you bring that up, is that you could just say, look for movies. And it would be able to say, it might be able to say, like, oh, I can identify that looks like a movie.
Mm.
Versus, you know, somebody's picture of their cat skateboarding or whatever.
I love all this video search. It was so interesting when Chat Roulette came up. Somebody wrote this amazing program that was the anti-penis program. So it basically put an overlay of face detection.
Yeah.
So when the shot came up, if there was no face, it presumed there was only penis. And then the whole shot went away.
The savior of chat roulette.
Because nobody's going to have both on chat roulette.
I was just thinking the same thing.
It was one or the other. So yeah. I think that's brilliant. Like that video search and these kind of algorithms are so sophisticated. And if it has to be about the P word, then so be it.
All right. We're going to take a video call now.
Hopefully.
We have that detection in place. So it is safe. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv. If you've recorded a video and uploaded it, send us the link. We may very well use it, like we're using this one here from Bill.
Hi, Tom. This is Bill Meeks. I'm a big Twit fan, big fan of all your podcasts. I knew you were wanting some feedback on TNT. First of all, you have about two more days on the beard, and I'm sure it's probably getting pretty itchy out there in California right now. But I really enjoyed the first episode. Like I said in the chat room, I think it'd be nice if you let Eric talk a little bit more. I mean, I know he was busy trying to get everything set up, but you know, he always has pretty good insights on Tech Talk Back. As far as Google dropping Windows, I think that's really more of a PR stunt than anything, because they can't completely eliminate Windows. They have Gmail Notifier, they have Google Desktop, they have all these Windows products, and how are they going to be able to test new versions, old versions, security flaws, things like that, if they don't have Windows on site? I mean, I'm sure they can run it in a virtual machine, but they're going to have Windows. I think it's more petty politics with Microsoft than anything. But again, Tom, really good job on the show. I've really been enjoying it. I can't wait for the next episodes.
All right. Thanks, man. And Bill, you are the first official video call.
He was pro.
I know. Good light. Good setup there.
I know. Everybody's a videographer now.
I know. That's what's amazing. So there's your standard, everyone. Maybe a little bit shorter. Bill was good. He kept it under a minute. Mm-hmm. But the shorter, the better. And there's your standard for video production. Mm-hmm. All right. Veronica, you still there? You haven't got kicked out of your conference room yet, have you?
No, someone did peek in, and I had to be like, I'm on a podcast call.
All right. We'll try to wrap up here shortly for you. You can also phone call us. 26, that's what they, I'm verbing that.
Phone call us. You can use the telephone to make a phone call.
Pick up the phone and call. 260-TNT-SHOW. That is our phone number.
We need a jingle.
Yeah.
260-TNT-SHOW.
Like 588-2300.
800-588-2300-EMPIRE.
All right. While we try to think of some more jingles for 260-TNT-SHOW, let's hear from Jose, who has an idea about Google TV.
Bring it.
Hi, my name is Jose from Florida, and I was wondering if Google would benefit from buying TiVo and incorporating it with Google TV. Thank you.
That is a interesting suggestion.
Well, this is that question of hardware, software, organization, web, cloud. And it's salient, especially today, going back to the Steve Jobs comments from yesterday, because he was asked about Apple's involvement in the hardware of bringing a set-top box into the picture. And he said the biggest problem is the market strategy, how to get the product to market. And the problem is, he said, it's basically a cluster out there right now. You've got all kinds of interfaces, all kinds of controls, all kinds of hardware. It's too much of a mess. So I don't know that Google needs TiVo if they can create a ubiquitous platform that will integrate into the existing hardware of Samsung, Panasonic, Sony. If they get that kind of integration, who needs it?
Well, what's interesting is, while I think that they would definitely use their own software for that kind of purpose, it would be nice to have that installed user base of TiVo boxes around the country. And, you know, frankly, I don't love the new TiVo software. I've been playing around with it a little bit, and I definitely prefer the old version. And it would be nice to have Google TV running on my TiVo so I wouldn't have to buy a new set-top box.
So basically, they would just use the box, firmware upgrade, flash the whole thing, and just go fresh using the hardware.
Yeah.
I mean, the way I put Boxy on my Apple TV, it'd be the same kind of situation. I don't know how much of a fight TiVo would put up in that situation, if it would actually be a partnership or something where we're kind of hacking into TiVos and reinstalling the operating system.
It might be an end around on the cable companies.
If Google bought TiVo, which I don't really think they should do, but if they bought them and then they could flash their Google TV software to all the TiVo boxes that are out there, and that would mean making
TiVo.
Sure that all that software can operate on all those various devices, because you got a handful of them out there.
Right.
That would give them an incredible install base right off the bat. You're right, Veronica. That would be the one tempting thing for them.
That's a big engineering ask, but it's a cool idea.
Well, if anybody can do big engineering asks, it's Google.
Yeah, it's Google.
That's for sure. All right, on to the emails. TNT@twit.tv is the place to send your missives. Thanks to everybody who's written into us. We got a couple of them we're going to read here. Becky, you want to start with one?
Yeah, we talked yesterday about Microsoft, the University of Arizona, and that they were using their doc formats. It was for cloud computing, right, in terms of that was, we needed to represent Microsoft's wins also. And this is from Paul Reeve, who writes, I had a short, well, actually, about the University of Arizona moving to Microsoft products yesterday.
It's our
yesterday.
First TNT, well, actually.
Well, actually. It's only the right faculty, staff, professors, et cetera, that will be using the Microsoft products. The students were all moved over to Google Apps for Education 6 months ago. Reason being, basically what they're saying is Google couldn't guarantee that emails would stay on U.S. soil, which is... U.S. soiled.
All the different soils.
All the different soil types, which is a requirement for the DOD and other federal government research if the professors are emailing research materials back and forth. He says, I'm a student at the U of A, sysadmin for one of their departments. So I get to hear about all this cool stuff. And he really enjoyed the first episode. Keep it up, Paul Reeve. Go Wildcats.
Thanks, Paul. Yeah, go Wildcats. Right back at you. I like that the first well actually is against someone else, not us.
Right, because that first story was about from an email too.
Right. Another email from Tim in Austin, Minnesota, who says, I just got done listening to episode one, and you discussed the publishing company's push for new DRM. Tom referenced the music industry's long fight over the issue and eventual abandonment of DRM. I would submit that the book industry has an advantage over the music and movie industries, and he points out a Torrent Freak article that compared the rise in piracy now that the ebook readers are out. Specifically, the iPad coming out raised piracy of, say, Freakonomics 104%. It went from 187 downloads to 381. And how he decides on even bigger surge, going from 56 to 134. He's basically pointing out, look, Avatar was downloaded millions of times, and he says, this confirms my thoughts that ebooks are much less prone to piracy. Anybody consuming ebooks is most likely to do so on a smaller hardware device, and until the iPad, most of these devices are made specifically for the consumption of ebooks. Therefore, consumers highly unlikely to buy a device with the intention of pirating ebooks. He's right, it's a lot easier to just buy it on the device than to go and try to pirate it and risk getting the viruses that you're talking about and then dragging it over.
Yeah, it's so funny how everything is media specific and medium specific in terms of what our philosophies are about buying, borrowing, stealing, sharing. It defies sort of generalization.
I think what happens with the industries is they underestimate how lazy people are. And it's actually a little hard to pirate. And so if you make it really easy to buy it or get it with advertising, you'll win.
Right. Also, ebook systems are so much more closed, it seems.
Well, when I'm buying comics now on the iPad, I'm spending way more money than I should be. And the reason is I'm in the reader reading the comic. And when I get to the end of the comic, a little button comes up, says, buy the next comic, click here.
Yes, please.
So easy. I didn't spend anything. I just hit a little button. Boom. Right. Next comic. And I'm already on to the next one and reading the next issue.
Market forces solving
I'm surprised
the problem.
More people haven't been sending books around using PDF because you can't actually, email yourself a PDF to the Kindle and read it that way. So you still have to pay. It's like a very small amount, right? Like 10 cents.
Yeah, I think it's around 10 cents.
The conversion rate. I'm surprised more people aren't doing that, or am I just missing the whole PDF piracy boat on Kindle?
That's going to be the focus of the show from now on.
It's actually...
ebook piracy.
But that's the thing. It's so easy to do that. You're right, Veronica, but it's actually harder to do that than to be in the Kindle already and press buy.
Yeah, but it's interesting too,
because I don't have to put it down and anything else.
A song is 99 cents. A book is 16 bucks or 9 or 7.99 or whatever they are this week, depending on the book. I think it's fascinating that it doesn't seem to be necessarily price specific. It is. It's something about, the PDF would seem like a no-brainer, but
yeah.
I don't know.
I think I just like authors better than musicians.
They deserve more.
I want to give them more money.
And that's because you do the fantastic podcast Sword and Laser at swordandlaser.com with Tom Merritt.
Gratuitous cross promo.
We have a brand new episode today.
Pimpage.
Yeah. Oh, I did you want to pimp something else? I'm sorry.
Well, I've got Texilla on Revision 3 every week, and of course, Core on the PlayStation Network, which you can find on your PS3.
All right, check those out. VeronicaBelmont.com also to follow everything Veronica does. Thank you. It was great to do a show with you again. We'll have to make a habit of this.
I concur.
How often can you
come
back?
And I'll have to come to the cottage sometime.
Yeah, yeah. We'll definitely have to have you up on the cottage. Becky, we did it. Show number two.
Number two.
Yeah.
It's in the can, as Lee would say.
You'll be back tomorrow, right?
I will.
We're going to have John Strickland from the Tech Stuff podcast at howstuffworks.com. Mm-hmm. Don't forget, you can email us, TNT at twit.tv. Our website is twit.tv/TNT. And our phone number is 260-TNT-SHOW. Thanks to Leo for letting us on the network. Thanks to Eric for producing. Thanks to you for watching and listening. See you tomorrow.
Bye.